You're listening to The Dice Men Cometh, proudly sponsored by Area 52, Tasmania's largest independent pop culture retailer. Find them at 104 Elizabeth Street, Hobart, or online at area52.com.au.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Welcome, everybody, to The Dice Men Cometh, which is a radio show and a podcast all about board games and card games and dice games and any other games that you would care to play on, around, through, in, out a table. And we are very proud today as Australians because the yes vote did get through in that postal vote, and we hope to see a lot of everyone loving everyone else in the coming days, weeks, months and years. And also, more importantly for us in this hobby, the Seven Wonders app, after 880 plus days in, let's just call it, purgatory, finally came out, and anyone who has an iPad, Mark,
yes,
can play it. So thank you very much. It is episode 190 on today, which is the 16th of November. We are The Dice Men Cometh. Tonight, there is Garth.
And Mark.
And Leon.
And tonight, we are also very proudly presented by the Yes Voting Area 52.
Absolutely. Yes, they're all inclusive. They've got card games, board games, comics, manga, anime, Funko Pop vinyls, books,
and all that good stuff.
Yeah. Correct. And what have we got on tonight? We have a lot on.
We certainly do. We can't dilly-dally.
Do you want to tell us?
We're going to talk about a game that we've played recently. Might have been a month or two ago, but whatever. Doesn't matter.
It was recent.
And we've also got some news coming out of just the general board gaming world, as well as what came out at Essen this past couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But we've also quickly got to talk about our competition with the Campaigner magazine.
Do we ever. So, yes, we are very proud to be associated with the Campaigner magazine for this competition. Now, for those who haven't listened the last couple of weeks, Campaigner magazine is the premier Australian tabletop magazine. Check it out at thecampaignermagazine.com. And one lucky listener is going to be the recipient of 12 months of free subscription. And all you have to do is jump onto that website for the Campaigner magazine, tell us either via email or via tweeting or via Instagramming or carrier pigeon or Facebook message, what game is featured on the current issue, being issue 21. Of the Campaigner magazine.
And is this the last week of our competition? Are we going to draw it next week?
No, we're going to go on for a little bit longer.
Okay.
Because the 12-month subscription doesn't start until next year. So there's no hurry on this.
Okay.
So we're going to go on for another couple of weeks because we've got heaps and heaps of entries, but we want heaps and heaps more. And more importantly, we want heaps and heaps of people to go on to thecampaignermagazine.com, check out the great content that Matt and his team are producing there because it's awesome.
And all the back issues are still available.
Yeah, I was going to say, while you're at it, while you find out what was on the cover of the most recent issue, you might as well buy it as well. I read it the other day cover to cover and it was absolute belter.
Exactly right.
Fantastic.
So there you go.
Now, we may not be in a hurry to close the competition, but we are in a hurry to get through all the material we've got tonight. So let's get back soon. Now that was Boppity Bop, bopping along there by the Ray Guns, a Tassie act here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh, proudly supported again tonight by Area 52, our friendly local game store at 104 Elizabeth Street.
Yes. Now, correct, Garth. Mark. Gold Star.
Garth.
Hello.
We played an amazing game recently, didn't we?
We did. Well, I like to think that you played it with me.
Oh, God.
Oh, here we go.
One dice roll and
it's
all
of a
sudden.
It's going to be like that.
Mm. Oh, look, we'll get to it. So anyone who has listened to the last couple of weeks and when the Dice Men have talked about what were their highlights of PAX 2017, you will have heard that there was nothing for me that compared to that Sunday morning when we got Black Orchestra to the table.
Yes.
After a breakfast kebab, I mind you.
I did have a breakfast kebab, actually. It was very nice.
It was a belter of a morning.
I still owe you some money for that. But anyway,
I think you do, actually.
We are talking Black Orchestra, or as I accidentally wrote in our little secret Dice Man chat, Black Hitler.
Yes, you did it three times, and I thought, he must know he's doing it by now.
But anyway, it's kind of appropriate. Look, this is a game by designer Philip Dubarry. And it has artwork by Game Salute and Australia's second or third favourite negative panellist, Dan May, from PAX panels successfully passed where we won.
Yes.
Just have to get that in there again. Yeah. And look, this is a game that first came out in 2016 in a very limited release, then had a very, very successful late 2017 Kickstarter.
Yes.
And we have played the second edition of that. Now, what is Black Orchestra when it's not Black Hitler? So it is the game that takes everyone back to World War II, and we are basically all playing together to, not surprisingly, kill Hitler.
Oh, Garth.
Hello.
Garth. I've done some research.
Wow. Okay.
I've got a bit of a history lesson.
It's more than what Garth did.
Yeah, that's right.
Black Orchestra.
So the Black Orchestra, or the Schwarze Kapelle.
Okie dokie.
Which is German for Black Orchestra. So that was the term actually used by the Gestapo to refer to a group of conspirators within the German military.
Yes.
Who plotted to overthrow Hitler. And it included many senior officers within the Wehrmacht, the German war machine. However, unlike the Rote Kapelle...
Oh, my God.
The Red Orchestra, which was the name given by the Gestapo to the Soviet spy network in the Third Reich, the members of the Schwarze Kapelle were of mostly aristocratic background. They very much felt contempt. It was beneath them, the ideological fervour of the Nazis. They just thought, calm down a bit, boys. You're just getting a bit carried away with this. And so they were politically quite close to the Western Allies. There was a lot of backroom happenings prior to the start of the war. Now, when you play this game, you're sort of feeling like, oh, we're these famous, you know, we're these people who are coming from outside Germany or out of the system to kill Hitler. But it's not that at all. In fact, all of these people were patriotic Germans.
Correct.
Including many in the higher echelons of the Wehrmacht and the Abwehr, like the sort of the civilian war machine, who basically just thought that, hey, Germany's pretty cool right now. The world's scared of us. But Hitler, he's going to just take things a little bit too far. Guess they were onto something there. And so by overthrowing the Nazi party, they thought they'd actually lock in the gains that they'd already made in the war, but preserve German sovereignty and then let, you know, the upper class people basically run the show.
Oh, so an oligarchy.
In a way, yeah.
Is there any more words that are hard to pronounce we're just going to throw out there?
Yeah.
So there you go. That's the facts.
But also for people, in popular culture, the Tom Cruise film Valkyrie is pretty much based, this is pretty much the board game version of
you
that.
You can
instance.
Play or, the Tom Cruise character.
Or that scene in the Time Slides episode of Red Dwarf where they talk about it for about a few seconds, which is how I knew about it as a child.
Well, there you go.
And the great thing is, obviously, this game, and you'll talk about, has plots.
Yes, yep. I will.
Pretty much all those plots, as I understand, are actually based on real events.
Things they actually considered to, you know, knock off Dach Führer.
Not just considered, but tried. Like, you'll talk about the plot we were successful in. Well, apparently that...
We were successful? I shouldn't interrupt.
That was a real plot. It's just that they didn't actually quite succeed with it. So, anyway... There you go, a bit of history.
There you go, Mark. Well, you back were around to, at that the time, game so, world. I mean, you had first-hand experience of it, which is good.
There it is.
I know. So, yes, this is a fully cooperative game. There is no traitor in this game, except for Hitler.
Yeah.
And all his generals, which he rocks around with.
Yeah, or the Gestapo.
Yeah.
Who will try and really mess you around and maybe throw you in prison if you're not a good boy or girl.
And who'd have thunk it that prisons in 1940s Germany... wasn't overly fun.
No. So look, anyway, let's get back to what this game is, because this is what we've been playing, not this week, but in the last month or so. So the easy way to describe Black Orchestra is it basically is World War II pandemic.
Yes.
You are fully cooperative. You are taking a certain number of actions on your turn, and then, very much like pandemic, you are drawing an event card, which will then have something that is almost always bad happen, but sometimes kind of good. Now, where this differs in that pandemic mechanics is it's played out over the seven phases of World War II, and that is seven stacks of cards. In each card, you will randomly and secretly remove two of them, so there's always that little bit of replayability and never knowing really what that deck is going to be for. And very much like war... it has an ebb and a flow because the start of it, it's a little bit easier and not as really soul-destroying. There will be good events and bad events, but they're not really, really good or really, really bad. You'll then have a bit of a lull in the middle where they'll be okay and they'll be bad and there'll be something a bit sideways. And then as you get towards the final stages of the war, it'll go a little bit more extreme in that regard.
That middle bit where Hitler decides to have a little walk into Poland, which some people may know about, which kind of caused a spot of bother.
It did. Now, one thing to really be aware with this game is that although it is a game and it is fun, is that it also makes you acutely aware of the seriousness of World War II, because we're getting now to the stage where obviously World War II happened 80-odd years ago. There are plenty of people out there, particularly younger gamers, who won't realise the complete and utter devastation and horror that it was. So it's got this very intriguing little result at the end which tells you if you succeed and win the game in this stage of the game, you've just saved 30 million lives. Or if you don't win until stage 7, you've only saved 2.5 million lives.
Which in reality, since we know this plot wasn't successful, we know the fact that that didn't happen. It basically means if you failed, you've lost 40 million lives, which is what actually happened.
Yeah, and look, as someone who studied all of the histories throughout high school and is still very, very interested in both ancient and modern history, it's great to see that a game has the guts to do that. Now, obviously, when the game is itself killing Hitler, you'd be remiss not to have that kind of seriousness in there. But at the end of the day, this is approaching the gateway game marketplace. It is not a complicated game to be playing.
That's right.
So to have that serious theme is, I think, really, really good.
It is not much more overly complex than Pandemic with probably one of its expansions thrown on top. It's not much more complex than
that. Yeah, well, let's talk about it. So on your turn, you've got three actions each. That's very much it. Very much like Pandemic. Everyone plays their own individual character. Now, each character has two tracks that they are trying to keep up or down, depending on the track that you're trying to sort of focus on. One of them is your motivation. Now, the motivation is essentially how much you believe in the cause, and in this case, the cause is killing Hitler, and you want to get that as high as possible, and you want to be as fervent and as zealous so that you can enact what are going to be the plots, and the plots are going to be the end game conditions that you try and fulfill to hopefully succeed and kill Hitler. The other one that you've got is your suspicion track. Not surprisingly, because you're playing a character who is within the sphere of German hierarchy and is an integral part of the army or the businesses and the industry behind that, you want to keep your suspicion as low as possible.
Because that's going to nothing.
Exactly. That is really going to impact when you do any old dice roll.
You do kind of look like that guy.
Because dice rolls are where this game is very much won and lost.
And you have a bit of Colonel Klink about you as well.
Oh, thank you. Organ!
So, and look, people do complain about this game that, you know, it has dice, it's luck-based, unlike something like Pandemic. But to me, the dice fits perfectly thematically because you literally are rolling the die to have a shot at something that there's not that much chance of success,
We haven't actually mentioned that, and that is kind of the key mechanic of this game that differentiates it from other things, is that, as Garth said, you have three actions, but what you can do with any of those actions, or all of them, is roll a die. And if that, depending on what number comes up on that die, be it one, two, or three, or what have you, that's how many extra actions you could get. However, there are faces on that die which means you get nothing. There are also faces on that die which means if you collect those die, you can actually take some suspicion away from your characters or upgrade their zealousy to make them more stronger. So
zealousy, you say?
Yeah, that's almost a word.
Zealotry.
Yeah, sure, that's the one.
Or even reduce Hitler's military influence.
Yeah, so you could theoretically have 9 actions on your turn. We didn't see it come up. No. But I think Sarah at one point had, 7 or 8 actions on her turn.
So let's go through that, because most of the actions can really quickly be explained. So let's just, we'll do the one that you've just mentioned there, which is called Conspire. Yeah. Now, each player can only do it once on their turn. So everyone has 3 actions. And the way they say is that you can do it as your very first action if you wanted to, and you can roll all of your 3 dice, or you can do an action and then you can roll 2 dice because you'll have 2 actions left. And yes, theoretically, you could get 9 actions if you did your very first action to be that Conspire one. Now, the problem is, on each die, which are just the D6s, you've got ones and twos and threes. You've then got the target symbol, which basically is a little bit of a bonus because every time you fill up the descent track, which only takes three dice, so it's really not many, then you'll get to remove those from the track and lower Hitler's military strength.
Yeah.
Or raise someone on their zealous track or their
motivation
track. Now, the other one is bad, which is the symbol
eagles.
Of the eagle.
Yeah.
And we don't like those ever. We never want to talk about those. They will go a long way to ruining the success of your plot.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
So you're trying to get the military track down because Hitler's harder to assassinate when he has a bigger, stronger military.
Funny about that.
As always. But the funny thing, you say that it's optional to roll these dice to get all these actions. Did we ever not do it, ever?
I think a couple of times because...
When we were desperate and we knew, like, yeah, we need these three actions, three definitely things. don't screw this up.
Yeah.
But very rarely we were just like, chugging dice,
totally.
See what happens.
And look, there is very much the risk versus reward of that. Mm-hmm. And I have no problem with it. Yes, almost everyone did it all the time. It also allows the turns to be a little bit more engaged because essentially you're going to be moving around... Almost exclusively the board is a map of Germany, a little bit of France, a little bit of Austria and a bit of Poland and maybe
the
Russia as well.
Czechoslovakia, the Sudetenland. And
so you'll be moving around the board, and the reason why you want to be doing that is in the next couple of actions where your actions are moving, or you get to pick up and drop off items. Now, when you first start the game, there'll be a random sort of face down lot of tiles that you'll put on selected cities. Part of your actions is you can go to the city, you can pick up the tile, and it might have a certain type of equipment or a weapon or a letter or something or other that can be used to then be delivered to somewhere else to gain more cards, succeed in a plot, do something else along the way to make that game a little bit more, I guess, again, thematic, where you're just doing as you are advised to by the hierarchy within the Nazi Party.
Yeah, that's right. So you might have a job to deliver a map somewhere.
Yeah.
Or deliver some signed documents.
Now, it must be said, in the game we played, I don't think anyone did that actual delivery of documents, except in a couple of key locations, because the way it'll work is you'll deliver those documents or weapons or whatever they say to each city, because each of the cities on them has a special ability associated with them. And it might say, if you take a map to Vienna, you can lower your suspicion by two.
Yep.
Or you can increase your motivation by one, or you can increase the motivation of the whole group of you by a total of three, or whatever the case may be. So it allows you to modify your stats as long as you're doing those pickups and deliveries at the right time to the right cities. And that's really quite cool as well. Now, obviously, this is a game that also has a lot of cards in it.
Yes.
So you can do card collection. And the thing is, when you start, you're only going to have a hand limit of two. And that is really not enough to be getting this game going because two is a small number.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
And the great thing is, as your motivation increases, so does your hand limit.
Yeah.
Which is essentially, again, thematically going, well, I know more, I've got more resources behind me, I'm going to be able to do more stuff, which is where those cards come in. Now, the thing is, you can play the cards as the need arises. However, there are these plot cards that you've got to keep in your hand until the very right time. And that is where this game goes from being a pandemic clone, dare I say it, into a game that is really tense, really exciting. And I think everyone can agree is just an amazing way to spend about an hour to an hour and a half of your time.
Yes, definitely. Yes. And, you know, those plots, you've got, there are certain things you absolutely need, and that'll give you a certain amount of dice to roll in the plot resolution. There are certain things that will let you add extra dice, but they're not compulsory. There are some cards that will let you re-roll dice or roll extra dice or whatever. And so you're really about collecting as many elements as you can from as many plots as you can to give yourself options. And then I guess you're waiting for the right time to strike. Because as we said, Hitler's military influence will go up and down.
Yep.
And
his deputies with their associated actions will be moving around the board as well.
But the reason that Hillary's, she's totally different. Hitler's military support is important is because it goes from normally three or two for an easy game up to seven. That's how many target symbols you've got to roll to be successful in your plot. So obviously, if his military support is almost at the top, say six, you've got to get a lot of things happening to get, firstly, at least six dice.
Totally.
But then you've got to roll. Like, it's like rolling a Yahtzee on the first roll.
Let's switch to how you win the game, because you've just heard how it is to actually play it. Now, the winning the game is all about these plots, and they are bloody difficult, it must be said, because you just mentioned Hitler's military support. It goes from two, if you're playing an easy game. We started at three, which is standard, and it does go up to seven. And boy, oh boy, in the early stages of the game, does his support get up to seven pretty damn quickly. Mm. Now, the problem that you have is these plots, they might only allow you to roll three dice, maybe two dice by themselves, but each of them will have these little bonuses associated with them if the active player meets those certain criteria. It might be something as simple as you get to roll another dice if one of the items that player is holding is a weapon. Or there might be another bonus, which is if you are in a certain city. Or it might be another bonus dice if Hitler's had to move because of a certain effect or whatever the case may be. So you've got to really, as you say, Mark, take your guess at being, I guess, saying this is the absolute optimal time to enact this plot, and let's have a crack.
Yeah, but there's also restrictions. So some of them can only be enacted by military people. Some of them can only be enacted by non-military people or civilians or Abwehr. Mm. So, yeah, it really is that puzzle of pulling all the pieces together to try and at least get the plot ready and have it stored up, ready to spring.
Yeah, and there was five of us playing, all relatively experienced gamers. I'm sure you heard from Garth's experience that, yes, we won, hurrah. I'm sure we'll talk about that in a minute.
Thank you.
But we were, I think, about a round and a half away from the game being over. Garth tried to enact this plot. This was the first time we tried to enact any plot during the whole game.
Correct.
If he'd failed that, it would have taken an absolute miracle for us to get all the resources and everything to one player to be able to enact another plot.
Yes.
So we were building up the whole time to try and get this one plot, and we had one crack at it, and it was a hell of a dice roll.
Thank you.
And because of the resources we gave him. So if it wasn't for that, we would have had no chance, which took a lot of luck. And as we kind of talked about this, not on air, but before we came here, that a lot of people, their complaints about this game sometimes have been that there is a lot of luck involved. However, as we've said before in other games, it's all about the theme of the game. And if you're trying to enact a plot to kill, at the time, the most powerful man in the world, I'm afraid you could have the best planning in the universe, a lot of luck's going to come into it as well.
Correct.
Exactly.
So the fact is that it's completely fine. As we saw years ago with the Grizzled, saying how every action you do in that game makes thematic perfect sense for the horror of that war. The stuff that you're doing in this game, also, this game is not far behind the Grizzled as far as I'm concerned, in a thematic sense that it all makes perfect sense.
Yeah, and one of the other things, of course, that adds to that tension is in each of the seven ages, years, phases, whatever they are, events. You've got one or two, or I think even towards the end, three cards that say Gestapo Raid. Yeah, now, this is this horrible thing where basically the most suspicious people get rounded up and chucked in jail. Now, of course, one of the things that happens when you get chucked in jail is the stuff that you've been collecting to enact a plot, a lot of it you have to throw away. And so I think at one stage we had at least three plots on the go, but getting chucked in jail just basically stripped two of us of the stuff we needed for that plot. In fact, I mentioned it in our PAX episode, I spent half the game either in jail or in the area of the game just outside jail, basically waiting to be thrown back in jail.
Correct. And another thing is the most powerful cards that you collect, apart from the actual plot cards themselves, are the restricted items.
Yes.
And they're the ones that will give you two extra dice, so will allow you to take your motivation up two or down suspicion by three or whatever. But, of course, as soon as you are caught by the Gestapo, they're gone. And not just they're gone, but those cards are taken, plus any of your other
extras.
Cards. And it's like you've just gone so far back in your planning, all because of that damn Gestapo.
Yes, pretty much. Okay, well, we need to wrap this up, but I will jump in quickly first because we need to say something negative about this because we need to have varying different things.
My negative is you guys didn't help me out.
Well, it's a lie. Absolutely. Oh, okay. We got you cards that will help you win. either way, before I say this game is really good. buy it. I'm going to buy a copy myself. However, there was a negative that I'm going to mention. I'm going to try not to be as specific, but as we said, there was those seven ages of decks of cards, and there was one or two cards you would take out of it to put a little bit of replayability variety into it. However, after playing through the game once, we kind of knew majority of what was in each of those decks of cards. So I know, if I were to play this right now, even though this was a month ago, I know certain rounds in this game where things are most likely to happen. So I know there's no point trying to, say, a plot in X round, because that's coming up and I know what happens in that round, and a plot's just flat out not going
to
work.
Yeah, it's so, one of those, you're going to use this phase of the war to build up or move around and try and get the resources that you need to then be able to do it in
the next turn. It absolutely does sadly affect the replayability. However, that is the only negative I have to say. Other than that, I don't have a problem with this whatsoever.
Yeah, look, I loved it. There are a few little things. Some of the art I wasn't absolutely in love with. But for me, the theme drew me in so much, because I am a history buff as well. You know, I love the Hardcore Histories podcast. And I was so into the theme, I was prepared to overlook that stuff. And just, I had a fantastic time.
Yeah, look, it's certainly a game that I would very much play over Pandemic over and over and over again. And I do put them almost on an even keel in terms of complexity of game. So I really, really enjoyed it. We need to find a game where one of us really doesn't like it, because we sound a bit like broken records.
Yeah.
But this game, on that Sunday morning, with that one dice roll, and we haven't even talked about the fact that if you fail a plot, a whole bunch of bad crap happens.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So there is a lot riding on that dice roll, which was done expertly by me. So I think it's pretty fair to say we love it. Let's throw to a song. Thanks, Area 52. Yes.
Okay, that was Work Christmas Functions Are the Work of Satan by Sam Upton and the Polywaffles. A high-quality Tassie act there on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. We are the Dice Men Cometh, talking about not having alcohol that functions, but talking about playing board games, card games, role-playing games, and also very large board gaming conventions.
Correct, Correctington, Mark.
So, anyway, while we were at PAX, there was a little convention over in Germany called the Essen Board Game Convention, which is apparently big and it's been going for 50 years or something, or whatever else. Either way.
Good research there, Leon.
Yeah, I was an absolute builder. So, I did some research on some of the games that were shown there that are hopefully coming out sometime in the next few months. And we talked before about not having much negative to say about Black Orchestra. Well, I'm going to get it out of the way now, because I looked at lots of games that came out there and were around there, and it's kind of, eh. For me personally, nothing blew me away, nothing really gripped me. There's a few things that look kind of all right, but there didn't seem to be any kind of monsters, although that might have something to do with the fact that everyone went, well, we're not releasing anything anywhere near Pandemic Season 2, but then apparently that's meh at the best anyway, so everyone's kind of like, oh, now we've got bugger all to play for the next couple of months.
Look, I think we need to talk about Pandemic Season 2 in that regard, because it seems to have been met with a collective...
Yeah, it's not far off C4 of just like, yeah, no, don't even. I mean, I think it's supposed to be better than that.
Yeah, I guess it's one of those things where the expectation is just so damn high that it arguably could never live up to it.
Yeah.
But I guess also for me, it is, I still find it really hard to get excited about Pandemic Season Legacy. Pandemic Legacy Season 1, because it's still Pandemic.
Yes, it's still.
Well, that I think is the biggest complaint about Season 2, is it doesn't even have the, well, at least it's got a good solid game underneath it.
Yeah.
Because they basically deconstructed Pandemic into a couple of little bits. I guess with the aim, by the end of the year, maybe you're playing a full game of Pandemic, but there's so little of the game at the start. Much like that was a big complaint about Seafall, is really, it's not till you get towards the end that it's a fully fleshed out game, and at the start it's really just bits of a game.
Yeah, I seemingly have to agree with you there. I have never really been excited about Season 2, purely because Season 1 for us has been a series of games where we've gone, yay, and then we've gone, and then we've gone,
Yeah.
And it's, I don't know, we're too heavy gamers. We don't like the gateway game so much anymore, or it hasn't varied it up as much as we were expecting. I don't know.
It's also because we're in a lucky position where we get to play a lot of new stuff.
Correct.
And the fact of playing any game multiple times, unless it's something we're all bang on, like this is our favouritest game ever, it's probably not worth our time.
Correct.
Anyway, so some of the games at the Essence Fair. Azul! Which clearly is going to be a game about a crazy big demon called Azul, and you have to fight him off with a horde of... No, it's by Plan B Games, which is the same guys behind Century Spice Road, and apparently this game is quite good, so they've released two games now, and both good, so...
This is game about redecorating your bathroom,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, give or take. It's it's number 10 on the hotness at the moment on the BGG.
Well,
so yes, as Mark said, but I'll make it a bit more finer at the point. It's about, the story of the game is about, it's the King of Portugal, who has, all the tiles in his palace were blue and white, which I'm sure were lovely. But then he went...
Well, if you've seen Lisboa...
Yeah, I was going to say, Lisboa, which I don't think his tiles were that nice, because of course they wouldn't be without Ian having a crack at it.
Well, they also got destroyed in a fire and an earthquake and a flood, didn't they?
Yeah, that is very true. Either way, he went on a holiday to a palace in Spain, saw all his multicoloured tiles and went, that's amazing, somebody do that back home. So the theme of this game is that you're all... a designer essentially designing a colourful pattern for him.
Your tilers.
Yeah, so think of it as a competitive version of, say, patchwork, or even like a Baron Park type thing, except you're using colourful kind of 3D tiles. Apparently the game is quite good, but, I mean, it's not the most exciting thing in the
world. No, but it's by Michael Kiesling.
Yes.
So a very well-known designer, and actually, when I went through my list of things that I was curious about, his name appears... at least three times.
Okay.
So that guy does nothing but design games, yeah, as far as I know.
Next, we've got Clans of Caledonia, which
is
number three on the hotness at the moment, which is a mid-to-heavy economic Euro game set in 19th century Scotland.
Aye.
Basically about the revolution in their country, be it from the industry, from the trade, from everything. But with that comes the fact that you need to feed all these people. So this game is about the agricultural revolution at the same time, which is we all of a sudden need to make food for 10 times the population.
Yeah, and again, very, very successful Kickstarter game from... six-ish months ago, and one that I hovered over the Pledge Now button.
Yeah.
But I listened to my own advice from the PAX panel that we won, saying I'm not going to back it. And I should have.
Yeah.
So I regret that.
So you're wrong. Garth is wrong. We have heard that here.
Yeah, okay. It's on radio now.
Majesty for the Realm, which is a card game by designer Marc Andre, who is the designer of Splendor. This is his new game after Splendor. So Splendor was a wee bit of a success. So now he's moved on to this game. There wasn't heaps of information about it.
No.
But I heard a few people saying they played it and they liked it, but I couldn't really get a feel about what it was really like that much. But it looks cool, and it's from a guy who did a good game.
There we go. So good research, Leon.
Yeah, not a worry. I tried my bloody damnedest. If there was better games, there would have been better research. Meeple Circus by Matago. So it's basically a dexterity game, kind of similar to that of a junk art mixed with a blueprints kind of game. So over the span of three rounds, the first two which you're playing simultaneously with everyone else, and then the third one you're doing almost like a little performance. During that, you're drafting different components and different cards, which lets you have your meeples, it has your elephants, your balancing boards, all this kind of stuff, and you're building it up in this nice little ring of stuff, as well as there's an app that comes with the game which has a timer, as well as circus music and all that kind of stuff. Looks like a good bit of fun. Thank you very much, Garth. And is
That's the best part of the game.
Anyway, and is probably also, it's be half the price that junk art is, because, I mean, junk art's so good, but, it's not cheap.
Especially with all the wooden components.
Oh, that's the thing.
The plastic one, yeah.
I haven't even seen the plastic one. I wouldn't even buy it. However, the wooden one is over $100, and I can't justify that in my head for a dexterity game, even though I've spent hundreds of dollars on mini games that I've... sometimes sold without even playing. But that's beside the point.
I don't know whether I can get excited about Meeple Circus, because I'm not sure it knows whether it wants to appeal to kids or whether it wants to appeal to adults, because the pieces you get are normal-sized meeples, except some of them are elephant shapes and some of them are meant to be round because they're the ball, and you got little sticks that are basically like the size of the fences that you might use in Agricola or something like that.
The barrels out of Puerto Rico?
Yeah, so it seems kind of cool, but it just doesn't look like it's actually that much fun. I don't know. I can't get excited about it.
Yeah.
It's hard to say. It could be amazing, could be not. Anyway, moving along. Voodoo Prince, a trick-taking card game by Rainer Knizia.
Oh, hello. The Good Doctor.
That's all I got.
Okay.
I could not find anything more other than people said it was there, some people played it, it was all right.
Well, obviously the follow-up will be The Witch Queen from New Orleans, and that'll have an awesome soundtrack.
Yeah, most likely. Then we move on to Merlin by Queen Games and Stefan Feld. You may have heard of him. He's done a game or two.
He has, but it'll probably cost $100 in shipping to get to Australia. Actually, they did have a Kickstarter about this, and it was $50 shipping for that game.
Yeah, thanks, Queen Games. Yeah.
But I do know that there is a copy that LFG brought, because they're doing their Essen Unplugged this week. So it'll be there in Canberra for all to see and play.
Point salad, I'm imagining.
It looks beautiful on the table, it must be said.
Which I was going to go to the Essendon Blood, but I'm kind of busy going to Japan because I want to.
Yeah, well, you should do that.
Anyway, so the whole point of Merlin is King Arthur is searching for a worthy heir. The game is played on a round board, which looks amazing. It's really colourful and nice. But the main mechanic in this game is dice rolling, representing roll and move.
Ooh.
So the most hated mechanic in all of modern board gaming, Stefan Feld went, I reckon I can do it well. So this is his punt at doing it well.
All right, well, best of luck to him.
Whether it works or not, we don't know.
I think for anyone who is on Kickstarter and is Australian, Queen Games is an insta not back.
Yeah.
So unless you've got 20 people and you're going to do a group buy, nah.
Which is a shame because they've got some interesting stuff.
Totally.
Fog of Love. It's a game for two players. You will create and play two vivid characters who meet, fall in love, and face the challenges of an unusual working relationship.
A working relationship?
Well, not actually work. I mean, as they're trying to make their relationship work.
Okay, so it's kind of like... Oh, what was that game from? And then we held hands.
Kind of similar to that, but it's got a different name.
Oh, well, look, any game that, again, goes adult and talks about feelings and emotions.
Yeah.
Great. I think it's fantastic that games should have those serious and very adult topics from time to time.
Indeed, you do.
Although I don't have feelings, I'm a robot.
Transatlantic by Mark Gertz. I believe I've probably got that wrong, who is the designer of Concordia fame.
Oh, okay.
Which is good.
Awesome.
It's a 2-4 player game where you lead your own shipping company, where you're transporting freight, mail, and passengers around the globe, and you're using that to purchase new steamers, which are actually historically accurate as well, to basically do better and become the number one company in the world.
Panamax.
Yeah, kind of. But this one's called Transatlantic.
And what was it, a steamer?
I don't know. I haven't played it yet. I can't tell you.
Okay.
Anyway, there was also that game that I must admit, this research is half-assed, you may have noticed. There was that game that is kind of like, it looks like Colt Express, but it's a submarine.
Oh, U-Boat.
Yeah,
looks cool.
I couldn't remember what it was called, and I was so lazy I couldn't move my thumb to Facebook message you boys saying, what was that called again?
It looks awesome. I really hope this is good because someone has to get it. Yeah, it's, like you say, it's that 3D... Colt Express style, but it's a submarine.
And it's cooperative, so you're working together
as opposed to Colt Express. And it kind of sounds like it is all of you are playing on the same team for Captain Sonar kind of thing, but with this awesome 3D submarine. I really want this game to be good because it looks like it should be fun.
It's like Colt Express cross with Das Boot.
But all cooperative. Yeah. It sounds like I've fingers and toes crossed on that one.
And finally, what I've got is A Handful of Stars, which I love that name, by the way, A Handful of Stars. I don't know why, but I just do. This is by Martin Wallace.
I was going to say
You may have heard of it. And this is the final game coming out of Tree Frog Games.
And it's got some of the worst font on the front of a box. I'm just going to bring it up here on the computer to see if you guys can actually see that it says Handful of Stars.
Okay.
So I'm not going to talk for a moment.
Okay. Well, either way, I'll talk about this game. You get up the horrible font. It is the third in a kind of unofficial trilogy, which started with A Few Acres of Snow. So it was A Few Acres of Snow, and then there was a second game in the trilogy called Mythotopia. They kind of share similar mechanics, and then they move it along. So you had A Few Acres of Snow, then Mythotopia, and now you've got A Handful of Stars, which is kind of the sci-fi version of these mechanics, and move it along. Okay, let's have a look at the picture.
I don't like that font at all.
It's not ideal, but it's not killing.
But even looks like the word stars look like it's in a different font to the rest.
I know.
I mean, the cover itself isn't amazing.
Anyway, anyone who is listening, bring up an image of A Handful of Stars. Let us know whether you agree or disagree, but I think it's not a very nice cover.
So it could be something to look at too. Everyone likes a bit of a sci-fi game. And like I said, the third in a trilogy, the final game by a company that's brought out some cool stuff, and Martin Wallace himself. So that's what I've got. Anything else you lads have that I didn't mention?
Yes, I did. Yeah. Heaven and Ale which I'm sure, Mark, you would have mentioned.
I did.
Yep, so that's another Kiesling game.
Yep.
So that's another one that I was really curious about. There's also Reworld, which is Kiesling and Kramer, that I'm very curious about. So I'm just going to scream through these ones really, really quickly. I'm curious about Noria. Now, Noria is a game.
Is she curious about you, though? That's the question.
Well, I'm taken, but thank you.
Yeah, I mentioned that one in my preview. Yeah. That was the person who'd won the sort of like Spiel der Jahres Rising Star the previous
year. That's right. And what it sells itself as is wheel building, W-H-E-E-L. And everyone starts with this three-tiered blank Lazy Susan style apparatus, and you're buying wedges to construct your wheel to be able to then do more and more actions with more and more bonuses. So it just sounds like a really intriguing mechanic, so I'm curious about that. Mm. After hearing good and better things about Ex Libris, I really want to play that, which is the game about being a gnomish book collector.
Yes, I mentioned that before, and I've heard nothing but good things as well.
Yeah. So I want to give it a go because it sounds intriguing and interesting. And thematically, I just hope when you play the game that all the spines of the books have very clever and witty book titles on them that would be in keeping with the theme of the game. I think that would be hilarious.
Yeah.
Mark, I've got more, but how about you go?
I've only got the ones that I talked about, obviously, pre-Essen.
Okay.
You know, Coaster Park, I think, saw a good outrun there. Agra, the Palace of Mad King Ludwig. So that was the one that was where you're cooperatively building the palace, but it's not a cooperative game. And a couple of expansions, like the Terraforming Mars Venus expansion.
Yep.
Did it actually come out? Because I haven't seen much about it at all.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's came out there. So, look, I really like the look of Altiplano, and I think it's fair to say that that one did get a lot of coverage after Essen. So it's just a simple game where you're in the Andes and it's that bag-building mechanic similar to Orléans.
Yeah.
Orleans. So I'm curious about that one, and I'm pretty sure that there's a copy of that at Essen Unplugged this weekend as well.
Yeah.
Look, I want to be excited about Charterstone, but I can't be.
No.
I think I'm legacied out for the moment.
Yeah.
And the last thing I want to mention is Pulsar 2849, which is, again, a dice drafting game that I think could be really, really cool. I just want to play it. So anyway, that's it.
That was Essen. There were some games. Hopefully in the next few months we'll get a hold of them, and a lot of them, hopefully they're better than the interest that's been in them, which is not a lot from me.
Well, we'll come back with a whole bunch of board gaming news, and we'll be sponsored again by our fabulous friends at Area 52.
That was Trust Punks with Good Luck With That, a banging little tune here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM this week, brought to you by our good friends at Area 52. The two most recent graphic novels that I read were Copperhead and Sex Criminals.
Okay.
Both very, very, very good. Go into the store and buy them.
It's time for the latest board gaming news. Now, very importantly, apparently, board game companies, if you're going to put a diagram of how to pack away a complicated board game with many parts and expansions, don't put the diagram inside the lid.
No.
Hey, Leon.
Hey. Especially such a brand new game that no one's ever heard of, like Carcassonne.
Anyway, if you don't know the joke, check out our Facebook page for that one. Now, Cards Against...
He's a big cat, I'm going to say.
Cards Against Humanity. Now, you know, we've bagged them out.
No, we've bagged out the fact that a lot of people play that game and nothing else.
Yeah.
The designers of that game are absolute geniuses and are very, very cool.
Yeah, and look, they always have a big annual, like, Thanksgiving, Black Friday-type promotion in America.
Yep. Which is coming up soon, isn't it, Black Friday?
This weekend.
Awesome.
Next weekend, one of those weekends. Anyway, it's called Cards Against Humanity Saves America this year, and what they've done is they purchased a plot of vacant land on the border between the US and Mexico, making it extremely difficult for President Trump to build his expensive border wall because American taxpayers are going to have to acquire all that land. And apparently you could sign up. It's sold out. You could sign up for $15 and they will send you stuff like a certificate to say that you own a tiny strip of this land. Because what they've done is they've actually had lawyers split it up into tiny, tiny pieces so that if you want to go to court and acquire this, you have to take the thousands and thousands of people to court. So obviously that's going to be a very difficult thing. Very clever.
And
life,
you know,
is good when you've got lots of money.
It's funny, but it actually does do a good thing. So good on you.
Well, it also raises the awareness of an absurd thing like a war's going to stop people coming into my country.
Okay, the Toy of the Year Award has announced its 2018 finalists, and in Game of the Year, which can include board, card, electronic, or other physical game formats or puzzles, doesn't include video games or apps. One of the nominees was Happy Salmon.
Oh, there you go.
By North Star Games. I was going to mention all the others.
A bit early for a Hall of Fame for that,
I think so. I don't know any of them.
Do you want me to
things
recreate
like
what it
Soggy
sounds like to play Happy
Doggy
Salmon?
Or Beast of Balance, no. The Silent Happy Salmon, Garth. Also, a couple of other things to mention. Two other games in the Innovative Toy of the Year category. Drop Mix.
Oh, yes.
Which is the game that I played, and I think I spoke very briefly about it in our pack section, where it's by the people who did the Guitar Hero type thing, where you mix like this electronic gadget that plays music with playing cards, and also Clask, which we saw played a lot.
Yeah, that's huge
at the moment. PAX. It's that little, it's like a sort of air hockey game, but with magnets. Anyway.
Correct. But congratulations to Clue. It's been out for a long old time, and it deserves to get in there. Did you mention that?
No, that's the next thing I was about to read, Garth. You're confusing the Toy of the Year Awards with the National Toy Hall of Fame.
Damn, forget what you've just heard.
Anyway, they have revealed their 2017 inductees into the National Toy Hall of Fame.
Oh, really? Cool.
Which includes the board game Clue, the paper aeroplane, and the Wiffle Ball. They're the three inductees. They beat out the Magic 8 Ball, Matchbox Cars, My Little Tony, the...
Hey, I'm your little Tony. Hey, come and play.
My little three-legged pony.
Oh, God.
The Pez Dispenser, the board game Risk, the card game Uno, the Transformers, and even Sand.
It's just utter bollocks.
Well, it's awesome. No.
Last year, Dungeons & Dragons was inducted, remember?
Well, damn right.
And it is. All of those are classic, except possibly My Little Tony.
we're going to make that a thing.
That's right. Now, we talked about Area 52 and that Thursdays is Comics Day. Well, a couple of pieces of comic-themed news. There's a new version of the social deduction game Spyfall coming out, DC Spyfall, where at the start of each round, you are in one of the unique DC locations, Arkham Asylum, the Daily Planet, Star Labs, the Halls of Justice. One of you is the Joker, or other villains apparently, but mainly the Joker. And, of course, the Joker doesn't know where he is, and everyone else is trying to guess who the Joker is. But the twist in this one is one of the players, and I think this might be an optional mechanic, but one of the players is Harley, who's secretly trying to feed the Joker information about where they might be. So quite an interesting twist on Spyfall there.
Have no idea how that's going to work, but interesting to see how they pull it off.
And to be honest, you could really just add that into any old version of Spyfall.
You could. Well, the first version, no, physical anyway, but the second version, there was two spies, an option to add a second spy. So, you could.
Okay. Yeah. Now, Upper Deck, who have given us Marvel Legendary Deck Building Game, are releasing another expansion.
Was it Spider-Man Homecoming More?
From the Champions comic book series, where apparently, because I haven't read it, but young heroes are fed up after Civil War II, and it focuses on Gwenpool.
Yeah.
Is that like Spider-Gwen and she becomes like a Deadpool?
Yeah, give or take. Yeah.
Okay. Viv Vision, Nova. The themes of the comic, which focused on less violent ways of dealing with problems and the importance of protecting the public, are in the game through a new mechanic where cheering crowds, which is the name of the mechanic, means the more bystanders you saved, you can use those bystanders to let you do different things.
Yeah, cool.
And it also reintroduces the versatile ability, which hasn't been seen since Legendary Dark City. Now, one more talk about comics. And did I mention Thursdays is Comics Day at Area 52?
No.
Top 10 graphic novels for October. I just thought really interesting. Walking Dead, Here's Negan.
Shocking.
Batman and Flash, The Button, Seven to Eternity, Rat Queens, Volume 4.
Yep.
Super Sons, Hate Fairyland, Redneck, Volume 1, Star Wars Screaming Citadel, Batman Detective, and Low. Now, the interesting thing for me was...
Low is good.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6... I think you've commented many times about Image are the only comics to buy.
Yep.
Of the top 10, 6 of those are Image, 3DC, one Marvel.
You flat out, if you want to get into comics, you do not have to look at DC or Marvel.
There you go.
Image Comics is where it's at.
A couple more quick bits of news. Hasbro has made an offer to acquire Mattel.
Ooh.
Now, there's two behemoths of the gaming industry.
That means Asmodee must almost be interested in them then.
Well, apparently, Hasbro have recently acquired Mattel's Disney license, and Mattel stock is at an all-time low because Barbie and the American Girl doll, which is like an American doll girl thing.
really?
They're in
We've never known that by the name.
At the lowest levels ever, so Mattel is ripe for the plundering. And then it would bring Mattel's games into the fold with Hasbro. And because Hasbro has Wizards of the Coast, who knows what amazing license things they could make. Also in licensing, Mondo Tees, who basically do T-shirts and other licensed stuff based on film properties, they're going to create a licensed game, one, based on Jurassic Park. Well, I think someone's beat them to the punch on that one. But secondly, based on Fight Club.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So Mondo Games, expecting to release in 2018. That's going to be really interesting.
Stretch goal is a bar of soap.
One of the things they have done, though, is they did work on The Thing, Infection at Outpost 31, which was quite a successful little Kickstarter, I believe. And finally, WizKids are putting a new twist on the Cthulhu mythos next April when they release Arrive, a game of eldritch contortions. Now, in Arrive, players form a team of two, where one is the cultist and the other is the Great Old One that they're hoping to summon. To complete the ritual, the Great Old One must place their appendages on landmarks in Arkham as instructed by the cultist, and the cultist is hoping to contort their partner into the pattern on the cards. But because you've got competing Great Old Ones, if you touch your tentacles together, it's bad.
Yeah,
do you know what this is?
Kama Sutra?
This is effectively Cthulhu Twister.
I was about to say, a very unsexy twister.
All right. And that's all the board gaming news.
Good job there, Mark. So thank you very much for listening to episode 190. Please go onto the Campaigner magazine website and please find out what game is on cover, issue 21. Please email us at dicemencometh@gmail.com about that, or tweet us or Instagram us or Facebook Messenger us. We have been the Dice Men Cometh, and we're out of here.
Thank you.
Yes, I will see you all in 3 weeks. Oh. I am off to Japan.
Have fun. Yeah. Konnichiwa.
Thank you very much.
Sayonara.
This has been another episode of The Dice Men Cometh, proudly sponsored by Area 52, offering comics, books, card games and board games for the whole family. Find them at 104 Elizabeth Street, Hobart, or online at area52.com.au. And find us online at thedicemencometh.com.